You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 405, and we're here to talk about Notre Dame's victory over Temple. Season opening victory, big time win. And we're going to talk about the different position groups, what we thought about the game overall, and some things that stood out. Randall's here as well. Randall, how are you doing on this fine Monday afternoon?
Great. It's good to be here and talk about a dominating win for Notre Dame.
I know. I did not expect this kind of a blowout, but I'm much more confident in this team. And who knows how good Temple is, but I can't help but be a little more confident about the Irish, because I do think, regardless who Temple ends up being at the end of the year, I still think we learned something about Notre Dame in this game.
Yeah, they did multiple things that we wanted to watch for. They did it right. They started fast, took two plays. They didn't even have time to show the starting lineup for the offense and the defense on that first drive. Usually, they go through each player, but they didn't even get a chance to do that. And they ended strong. It kind of second and third quarter, they scored seven, a touchdown in each quarter. But then the fourth quarter, they're still going strong and scored 14 points. So it seems like Notre Dame always backs off once they get a lead. But like Brian Kelly said, they were going to keep pushing regardless of what happened.
The opening play, I put a Twitter poll question out there a few hours before the game and asked what the first play will be, either designed run, designed pass, or run pass option. And I did expect either designed run or a run pass option. And the results were 54% thought it would be a designed run, 34% a run pass option, and then 12% a designed pass. Well, it was a designed pass, play action, and it was beautiful. You could see Temple, their linebackers were ready for the run. They stayed close to the line of scrimmage. And you had EQ on a corner route, open, nice pass by Wimbush. And I think it shows a lot of confidence that the coaches have in his ability.
None of this easing into the game. Just throw it deep. And it obviously worked. If it would work, it really boosted his confidence. But if it didn't, it'd be a little harder.
If it would have been a pick, we may not be talking how that was a great play. Did you notice or think about the atmosphere around Notre Dame Stadium? We weren't at the game. We were watching it on TV.
I didn't really think about it. I saw different things on Twitter. Some people thought it wasn't that much different. Other people thought it was louder. One comment I saw was that you still had the same fans, the quiet, boring fans. So even though they did all the other stuff, it wasn't like the fans got into the game, and I remember on the broadcast they mentioned one time that it got the fans back into the game after they scored. I obviously it will get like that if you have a big lead. But I don't know. I heard different things about it.
And it's kind of hard to remember exactly how it was in the opener last year or the year before that, but you did see players at the beginning jumping around on the sideline before kickoff, and it was probably like that last year too, and the year before that. But definitely, there was excitement there. Maybe it wasn't more than other years, but they were pumped up, and the atmosphere on TV looked like it was an exciting atmosphere. Let's start talking about the offense. Over 600 total yards, 49 points. Could have had a few more if not for some missed field goals on special teams. But just a dominating performance. And Notre Dame came out with heavy personnel. They had two tight end sets on their first two drives, and then they did have some two running back sets. But pretty much always only two wide receivers on the field. There was a few times when they did have three wide receivers on the field. And in the first half total, I only rewatched the first half, but in the first half, there was only a few times when they had three wide receivers out there, and when that was the case, the third wide receiver was Freddie Canteen, and for one play in the red zone, we did see, and it was on, I forget which drive it was, but we did see Chase Claypool out there. But I was kind of surprised that
Michael Young was out there as well, but it wasn't a three. It looked like there were three wide receivers, but Tony Jones was actually out wide, and then Michael Young was the other receiver there.
Okay,
I missed that. So Michael Young did see the field as well, but yeah, definitely not the rotation that so would have expected.
Yeah, and like I said, that was just the first half, but as far as the numbers at the end, you only had, besides the starters, you only had Claypool with one catch. He had 16 yards. But I was kind of surprised we didn't see a heavier rotation with the wide receivers. And I still expect Claypool, maybe Boykin, to step up and push out, to push at least for one of those spots.
Yeah, it's definitely tight end heavy. We definitely know the tight ends are going to be used. They had seven out of the 17 receptions, and we know the tight ends are going to be used quite a bit.
That was one of the big questions that we had. We heard about it in the spring that tight ends are going to be used, and we saw it in the open practice and now opening game. They were, no question about it,
and as fullbacks as well.
Yeah.
So let's
just start then going more in depth with the tight ends. We have to mention this right off the bat, thanks to Irish Don, but Alize Mack, two drops, and definitely the one was very tough on the sideline close to the end zone. He was sandwiched between two defenders, but it is a catch that wasn't more difficult than what Nick Wisher or Durham Smythe.
It was less difficult than what they did.
Durham Smythe also had a tough catch, and he got hammered in the shoulder with a helmet, and he hung on to the ball. And
wait,
especially
hammering the shoulder with a helmet, isn't that targeting?
Oh, it probably should have been. Maybe it was just below the shoulder. And by the way, he did go out for concussion protocol, and Brian Kelly said afterwards that he was fine and that, in fact, he was correcting Brian Kelly in the locker room then. So it seems like he's fine, and I expect that he'll be playing against Georgia.
Yeah. But yeah, with Mack, there was two drops. The third one, we won't count it as a drop.
It happened earlier in the game before these two drops that were the final drive of the half. Two passes to him right in a row. The first one was a 5-yard out. It should have been an easy catch. I mean, there was no defender hanging on him. And I am concerned. I'm still super, super optimistic, and I think he'll pull through and have a great season. But I'm disappointed.
Well, the thing is, we shouldn't be disappointed except of how hyped he was. That's the only that's the reason we're disappointed, is because of the hype. And so, you know, he did play good. He was out there blocking. He did make some catches. The one time he dropped pass, he actually took out one of the girls on the sideline. He did tweet something about that later. But, you know, he was doing stuff out there, but because of all the hype surrounding him, it's safe to say that everybody was disappointed.
I'm sure he was disappointed too.
Well, yeah, exactly. I was a little more skeptical of what he would do, so I'm surprised he had that many drops. But he's got to step up. The way the other tight ends are catching the ball, if he wants to stay out there, he's got to catch those.
And just for comparison, Mack did end up with two catches for 17 yards. Smythe had two catches for 34 yards. And then Wisher had three catches for 20 yards and that touchdown catch.
Wisher, at least two of his receptions were very difficult, especially that touchdown. Wimbush
probably shouldn't have thrown him.
Exactly. Probably shouldn't have thrown or led him a little more than what he did.
There was also a defender on the outside. It was a window.
Yeah. But he hung on to it, and it was his first career touchdown. He tweeted out later. He said, "Nice to finally see you, end zone. Please don't be a stranger." But Brian Kelly did praise him in the press conference afterwards. He did mention that he looks more like a dad than the other three or four stallions that they have in the tight end group, but he catches the ball. He said they did fourth down when they were doing fourth down scenarios in practice. He was making all the catches. And so from what we've seen the first week, it looks like Wisher is finally going to step up and make a difference.
If I do think if Alize would have another game like this, that it will impact how many targets and snaps he ends up getting, at least snaps where he's maybe one of the primary reads on that given play.
Yeah.
Because if there's drops and you're open, you don't move the football.
The thing that surprised me about that is a lot of the videos and stuff you see in Alize in practice are him catching the ball out of the machines, mm-hmm. Anyways, trying to catch the ball. The new goal game, we were there. He was laying in the end zone with his head facing the guy throwing the ball, and he was catching it.
Over, almost like he'd be catching it hanging upside down.
Yeah. So he's maybe, always doing
maybe,
stuff like that.
Maybe that's his problem. Maybe he's used to catching the ball when he's laying on the ground.
I don't know. But impressed with the tight end group. I think they did a good job blocking as well. And Brock Wright as a fullback in there. Obviously, we'll see a lot of the tight ends.
And we didn't read off the receivers' numbers, but St. Brown led the entire receiving corps with 4 catches for 80 yards and 1 touchdown. He was targeted the most, or equal to Alize Mack, 7 targets for each of those guys. And then Cam Smith had 3 catches for only 10 yards. He was targeted 5 times, and it was just on a lot of shorter routes. A screen was the one. And then Claypool had 1 for 16, and then Canteen had 1 for 7.
No, keep going.
I was ready to move on and talk about the running backs.
Well, what I was going to say is part of the reason we didn't see more of the wide receivers is because the running backs did such a great job. I mean, with including Brandon Wimbush, you have 422 rushing yards. When you get rushing yards like that, you don't need the receiving yards.
Michael Birch, the media relations director for Notre Dame football, tweeted out that he believes it's the first time that in Notre Dame history that there has been 3 players with 100-plus rushing yards. So I'm not sure if they're still looking into that to verify, but at least with the research that they had done after that point of that tweet, which was earlier today, that total number is impressive. The 3 guys over 100 yards each is impressive. I guess, are you surprised? Josh Adams carried the ball 19 times for 160 yards, 2 touchdowns. Are you surprised that he had that many carries compared to Williams and Jones, who each had 6?
Yes, that was the most surprising thing to me. Especially with having a lead like they did for most of the game, I expected to see Williams a lot earlier than what we did. But it seemed they stuck with Josh Adams. And you know what? That's good to see that they are going to give the guys a chance. I like that better than the heavy rotation. But I did expect to see Dexter a lot earlier than we did, especially with Tony Jones not doing quite as much on the ground. He only had 19 yards on 6 carries, but he was in there a lot with Josh Adams. And then when Dexter did come in, this time Josh Adams opened it up for Dexter, and Dexter came in and with 6 carries had 124 yards.
He had the longest carry of the day, 66 yards, and twice he had long runs twice and almost got into the end zone twice. And then they did that. Tony Jones ran it in for a touchdown the first time, but then they did let Williams finish off the second long run that he had where he got him into the red zone.
The thing with Dexter, Josh Adams got caught in one of the long runs. Brian Kelly said he just got tired, which means that the strength and conditioning staff isn't doing what they're supposed to. But Temple's got some fast receivers. I think Josh Adams might be
defensive backs.
Yeah, I think Josh Adams might be a tad slower because he did put on some weight and might slow him down a little bit. But Dexter, you can tell when he has those long runs, you can tell he knows he's going to get caught because in the end, it's almost like he slows down a little bit and is trying to figure out how he's going to get past the guys versus just keeping it at high speed, in high gear, and running towards the end zone. I'd almost like to see him just keep going, because with that speed and with that force, or the momentum, I guess, you know, you could get a couple yards, but you can tell that he, in the end, he knows he's going to get caught, and so he's starting to find a way out, and it doesn't, he usually doesn't gain much after that. But yeah, Tony Jones, he was out wide. I mean, I guess you did see their strengths kind of. Jones, you know, you've used as a pass catcher, and then Dexter, like they said, he's got that explosive first step, and he can get through the hole. Josh Adams definitely was a little more patient trying to find the gap, and he broke quite a few tackles, so that was good to see.
We may as well, let's just talk about the offensive line now, too, and in relation to the running game, I do think Notre Dame ran a lot of RPOs, and you could see it because the receivers on the one side would be running a route, and in some cases they were maybe running a wide receiver screen, but on the other side there was maybe an inside zone. And so the offensive line, if they don't know if it is going to be, they probably have an idea based on the defensive, where the defensive end is at, but they're blocking almost more like a passing play. And I think that's one reason we don't always see that push from the offensive line when it is clearly a running play. I don't know. And that's one thing that is maybe a little bit concerning. And they definitely did get a push on some of the plays where it was clearly we're running the football, let's get a push. But I don't know if that hurts that, I don't know, mentality a little bit of just knocking the guy back because it's a running play and we need to get 1 or 2 yards.
Yeah, and I'd say the biggest thing on the offensive line is why they, which Brian Kelly addressed it in his press conference, but it seemed like they ran to the right too often. You know how dominant the left side is. And Brian Kelly said the plan was to run to the left, but they had to call run on that side because of where they were at on the field. But in my mind, as dominant as the left side is, you got to go to the right on some of those.
Yeah.
I mean, go to the left, sorry.
I mean, it depends how heavy, yeah, it depends how heavily it's stacked.
Don't let the field position.
What you need to do whatever gives you the best chance of moving the ball.
Yeah, and in my mind, the best chance would be going to the left sometime. Not all the time, but I'm saying even if you're on that side where all the math and everything says to go right, you still need to go left sometimes. But
I'm not disappointed that they did go to the right, and they did punch it in for a touchdown going to the right side on when Dexter Williams was in there after his long run. And it took two tries to do that. But I think that'll just help give them some confidence, because I do think against Georgia,
that's true,
Notre Dame's going to need to be able to run on the right and on the left against Georgia.
One of the biggest things the offensive line was the rotation of Tommy Kramer and Robert Hainsey. I did not expect to see Hainsey that much. That early. I think it was the second drive. They had planned to do that.
And it was split pretty much 50-50 between the two. He did get called for a false start.
Hainsey.
And like I said, I just rewatched the first half closely. And there was maybe two times. One time in particular, in that pass to Alize Mack, where the defender had his hand pretty much on the ball before Alize even had a chance. There was pressure from Hainsey's defensive end spot.
And I think they do bring in Hainsey when it's an obvious third and long, and they're going to throw the ball. That's when you'll most likely see Hainsey in there. But like you said, I think they got about 40 reps each. But Hainsey, after he got that false start, you could see him, they had a close up of his face, you could see him kind of try to shake it off and move on, like try to clear his head almost and move on. So, but it was surprising to see. I did not expect him to see him out there that much. But he did a pretty good job.
He did.
And he's a true freshman.
But both of them, I thought, did a very solid. And the offensive line as a whole did a phenomenal job. And Josh Adams was giving them a lot of credit and praising them for making it easy on the running backs for what they have to do.
Yes.
All right, Brandon Wimbush. Also had 100 yards rushing, passed for 184 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception, 17 of 32, and there were a few drops in there. But for a first-time start, I just thought he looked calm. He looked like he was in control. There was a few plays where it was on his scramble, where he scrambled for a touchdown in the red zone, where he was trying to motion for someone and something didn't look right to him, and it resulted in a touchdown. But there was very few times where he appeared to not know what was going on. Very few times.
Yeah, I mean, on that play, you know, obviously somebody was supposed to be in motion, or at least he thought so. But he ended up scoring a touchdown out of it. In years past, especially with quarterback coach Tommy Reese, that would have been a timeout. Like, you can picture him, you know, looking at the sidelines with his hands, like, what's going on? And then the timeout, and everybody's got to stop and figure it out. But here you got quarterback in his first start and just seeing how he can make something out of nothing. I mean, getting a touchdown out of confusion on the play. So that was good to see. I thought he did good. He made some passes under pressure. I think the stat, he got hit 16 times in this game, which includes sacks. It includes every kind of hit.
I wanted to ask you about that because we were talking about a little bit. We were watching the game together, and I did not like to see how many times he was getting hit. And I felt like he should have been sliding more. He slid one time. Brian Kelly was
asked,
that
was right after a huge hit. That's right before that he got hit pretty good.
Brian Kelly was asked about it, and he said he's a smart kid. He's not worried about it, but I do believe that that's something that is going to be worked on and talked about in practice this week, because if he's getting hit that many times, he's not going to last a whole season.
Well, Brian Kelly said he's a good baseball player and he knows how to slide.
And Brandon Wimbush was also asked about it, and he did say, I forget his exact wording, but something that he needs to do a better job of avoiding hits.
Yeah. But he needs to know when to get rid of the ball too. You didn't see him throw it out of bounds. He had one throw where he still tried to, they were about on the 20 yard line, on their own 20 yard line. And he was under pressure and he tried to throw it and it hit the defensive lineman. The lineman, if it would have been a linebacker, he would have caught that and it would have been a pick six. He's got to know when to, I guess in that case, take the sack.
You got to know when to hold him.
Yeah. Or throw it out of bounds or run out of bounds instead of trying to get those couple extra yards, especially after you have the first down. And then sliding. He likes doing his little spin move. And that one big hit right before he slid, he was trying to do that spin move and got crushed.
He got cracked a couple of times.
So let's just say he got the hits that we were worried about getting hit for the first time. He got that taken care of.
He got those out of the way.
But that's the biggest concern I have with him. I mean, he looked very poised, looked like he's going to be great out there if he can keep from getting hit too much.
All right, I'm finished talking about the groups. I did want to make a few more comments just on the offense as a whole. Are you finished talking about the offensive position groups?
Wide receivers, we didn't talk too much about that. I mean, EQ made everything look easy. He had a long catch where he actually came back a little bit and caught it. And then right after that, he caught it for a touchdown. And both of those, he just seemed like it was almost like slow motion. Like he was making moves to come back towards the ball, or he knew exactly what he was doing. It wasn't like he was like turning around and the ball was right there. He's very in control of what's going on and made it look very easy.
And on that touchdown catch, he looked to his right and the ball wasn't there. And then he turned around and looked to his left, or maybe it was the other way, but did a very good job of finding the football and didn't look, just like I said, he looked very much in control, knowing what was happening.
Yeah, but I do expect to see more of the wide receivers as the season goes on. Notre Dame will not be able to rush for 400 yards in every game, so you will see more of the wide receivers in games the rest of the season. The only other, of course, everyone's wondering, Kevin Stepherson was dressed but he wasn't out there. He was on the sideline wearing a hat, so it looked, he basically knew he wasn't going to play.
I was surprised how many big plays there were, and there weren't many huge passing plays. Most of the big plays did come from the running game. EQ did drop another long pass that he sort of caught. He had a hand or two on it, but they definitely took shots downfield. But I was surprised they didn't take more. I'm surprised they didn't throw the ball more just in short passing games, because that's kind of what I expected out of this offense. Definitely a lot of running, but I expected more of those screen passes and just some short route patterns.
I think part of the reason you didn't is because Temple was bringing all their players down towards the line to try to stop the run. So the short passing, it, everything was clogged because there was more Temple defenders in that area. And so I think that's part of the reason you didn't see as many.
Notre Dame's average yards per play was outstanding, 8.2. Temple's was at 4.6. And Notre Dame was 6-6 in the red zone.
Now that's an impressive stat.
Yeah. And it wasn't just running. There was two passes and one scramble that ended up being a run, and there were several rushing ones as well then.
And this is supposed to be one of the better defensive back groups that Notre Dame's going to face this year. And they made it look easy.
It just amazes me how different this team is from last year. I don't care how bad Temple is. Notre Dame would not have looked like this against this Temple team last year.
Well, no. They lost to Duke.
So and pretty, it just, little things can make a huge difference. I mean, it's just the way it is. Okay, let's talk then about the defense. Let's start with the defensive line. First off, the defense. I think I was more impressed with the defense than I was with the offense, because I assumed the offense was going to be solid. We knew the offensive line was going to be very good. Great running backs, I'm definitely impressed with them. They did exceed my expectations, no question. But the defense did even more, and I was most impressed after Wimbush's interception. They came onto the field, and it was in the midway through the third quarter. They had the ball at the 14-yard line, and Tavon had a couple unbelievable plays. He was playing at the Buck at that time, had a tackle for loss in the first play, and then Myron Tagovailoa-Mosa was offside, so it moved Temple forward again a few yards. And on 3rd and 5, Coney came up with a big sack, forcing a 36-yard field goal that was missed. Greer Martini is a captain, and he's a starter, but we do need to see more of Tavon Coney.
Yeah, I did. That's what I was saying when we were watching the game, but if you look at kind of rewatching the game and look at the stat, they both had 6 tackles. Coney had a sack, and then Martini attacked for loss, and he forced the fumble. So they both need to be out there, but it did seem like Coney was making more of an impact. Like, you could see what he was doing. I mean, you noticed the plays he was making.
And especially in that series, he came up really big.
Yeah.
He also played at Mike for part of a series.
Coney
did. And so I was surprised at that, but I guess they want to, it was very clear they wanted to keep guys fresh and rotating, and that was part of the rotation.
Yeah, and just what Coney did, I think it was after his sack, did do the Jalen Smith swipe. Dalen Hayes did it as well. Jalen Smith tweeted out about that later and said they're definitely allowed to do that. So it was just good to see that.
There's the swagger.
They obviously the former players are heavily involved with some of this, because I'm sure in seeing that, I'm sure Jalen Smith.
He did.
They know him good enough.
In the post game interview, Dalen Hayes was asked, why he did it or something, and he said, my big bro, number 9, and yes, they definitely, there's a lot of interaction and communication with the former players, and you saw a bunch of players on the sideline too.
Yeah, but with the linebackers, I would say made them more disciplined. Drew Tranquil and Niles Morgan didn't do as much as I expected them to do.
Drew was also in the backfield, though, early on in the game. I don't know if he was credited. Oh, he was,
but he had four tackles.
Yeah, he was credited with one tackle for loss.
And one tackle for loss, which I'm about to throw this in there now. They had 11 tackles for loss, and it was by 10 different players. So, obviously, pressure is coming from all areas of the field. But just think, you know, just looking at this defense, we expect Drew Tranquil and Niles Morgan to have a big impact. And I guess it's a good thing because everybody else stepped up. And they didn't need to be the star of the defense because everybody else stepped up their game.
There was a lot of, yeah, you're right. There was a lot of plays from a lot of different spots. There, let's talk about the defensive line and kind of with that their third down package, and I think that's their nickel package pretty much because Crawford was in there, but you have Trombetti moving inside, and then you have Julian Aquara and Dalen Hayes on the outside, and both of those guys, Dalen and Julian, each got a sack and were bringing pressure. And Temple, at least in the first half, did not have a lot of luck running the football to Dalen Hayes' side. And quite often, they actually ran to the other side. And the other side is a little bit of a concern. Jay Hayes is strong and powerful, but there was times when he wasn't quick enough to – he did make plays, but there was times when he wasn't quick enough to make a play and the running back could get to the outside of him. And that is something that does worry me against the better teams coming up, better caliber players like Georgia.
Yeah. And with that Aquara sack, the two tackles inside that were defensive tackles that were pushing the line – were Brandon Tiasem and Kurt Heinisch. So,
yeah, it was the backup defensive line.
Yeah, backup guys, and they were getting pressure. They were moving the line, and Aquara got the first sack season. That was a surprise to me. He was listed in the two deeps, but
he played a lot more than I expected.
Yeah,
he was out there pretty much on third and long. He was out there along with Trombetti and Dalen, but yeah, I didn't expect. Didn't expect that.
Romeo Okoro was there, his older brother, and I guess afterwards when we were waiting on the press conference, he kind of walked in and took the podium and acted like he was going to do the press conference. And somebody did ask him something. He was like, well, he's going to get after Julian because he saw him get pancaked out there. So he's going to give him a hard time about that. But I was impressed with the defensive line. I mean, I think they all played better. Even the backups. Well, basically, there was – two players that played at every position on the defense. There's at least two players at every position on the defense that played.
Do you know how many snaps the freshman linemen got, Kurt Heinisch and Myron Tagovailoa-Amoso?
No, I don't, but it seemed like they were out there quite a bit.
In the first, even in the first half, they were out there a lot.
I saw quite a bit of Tagovailoa-Amoso, that number 95. You saw his number quite a bit.
He had three tackles, and one was a tackle for loss.
And they're not going to put up big numbers. They're there to just move the line and try to put pressure so that the defensive end, linebackers, whoever's coming in, can take care of it. So their numbers, so their tackles aren't going to be that great. So to see that they got three, that's good for linemen.
And then Heinisch got one.
It was funny listening to the broadcast. They mentioned, was it Tagovailoa got, I forget the exact play, but basically they said, well, Jay Hayes kind of created the pressure there. And then Tirico, I think, said, oh, you just didn't want to say, you said Jay Hayes got the pressure just so you wouldn't have to say Tagovailoa Amoso, and which was probably right, but it was just kind of funny to hear them talk about that. So
Tillery finished with four tackles, and I didn't see him a whole lot in the backfield, but he did run down a screen pass from far away, ran it down, and made the tackle.
It was 30 yards out.
It was far away, yeah.
So that was his speed.
Well, and you see that he's putting effort into this. Yeah. I mean, this just by seeing him play, run that play, it matters to him. But more about Dalen Hayes, the guy is insane, absolutely insane. He like I said, it did not look like Temple was running to his side, and a few times that they did, they didn't have huge gains, or maybe a few times 5 yards, but they were not running to his side, and he was making plays on the other side. A lot like a former number 9, Jalen Smith, where he'd be making plays regardless where he lined up on the other side of the field. Yeah. He did that as well.
And if somebody tries to cut block him, he'll just go over you. He did it twice. So it's a little scary to see that, because it's a good way to get hurt. But just to see how athletic it was, instead of trying to go through the guy, he just jumped over him and got pressure on the quarterback. We've always been worried about having a pass rusher, but I think we got a very good one on the team right now.
I think we do. I think
I think he'll be a star.
I think Julian is very solid, like maybe even more than solid. Okay, let's talk more about the linebackers. Like we said, there was two deep pretty much at every position. Bilal played, Tranquil played a ton. Do you have any more thoughts on the linebacker?
Well, we talked about it a little bit, but obviously Coney needs to be out there a lot, and I think we'll see a heavy rotation. And I was actually surprised how much rotation was with Tranquil and Bilal, but I thought they were all making plays. I mean, it seemed like whoever was out there was making plays.
Kind of the front seven total, the blitzes that Elko dialed up, they got home. They didn't always end up in a tackle for loss or a sack. But there was times when they were getting pressure on the quarterback, and Tavon was there a few of those times where he didn't get credited with anything, but he was right there putting pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah.
Okay, cornerbacks, starters Nick Watkins, Julian Love. Julian Love did give up that touchdown pass, but it was solid coverage, and
That was a good catch by the Temple receiver.
Yeah, I mean, Julian played phenomenal. Even more phenomenal, I think, was on his punt return. Him and Dexter Williams are gunners.
I think he had 3 tackles.
He was down there. I don't even know why the Temple return man tried to run it, because a few times they were close. Other times, Julian just made a great tackle.
Yeah. One thing I will mention with linebackers, they did miss some tackles. Niles Morgan even missed a couple. So there is some stuff. Every once in a while you saw a flashback from last year. But it's definitely better than that. But they do need to work on tackling. Especially Niles Morgan had a couple missed tackles that he should have made.
At least 2 that I remember.
But back to the cornerbacks. Nick Watkins, it seemed like he saw a lot of Julian Love, and that's because they weren't throwing at Nick Watkins. I think they only threw at him twice, and the one time was a short pass. But obviously Watkins was doing what he needed to do, because they were not targeting him at all. And it was announced before the game, Temple's starting, their number one receiver did not play. So I'm sure that did make a difference for Temple as well, but I thought the cornerbacks were solid.
Crawford got in there as well, and he had 1 tackle.
When they went to 5 DBs, Crawford was next guy in there, the nickel guy, which wasn't really surprising. He did play some corner as well, and did a good job of that.
I think probably the player on defense that played the most snaps, maybe besides Niles Morgan, at the safety, was Nick Coleman. And I didn't actually look at, I don't have the numbers of snaps played, but he was out there a lot. And then they did rotate there as well. Obviously, you have the 2 starters, Coleman and
Elliott.
But you also saw Studs still played quite a bit. And
Isaiah Robertson
as well.
And Jordan Genmark Heath even got out on the field. So he had 1 tackle, he had a solo tackle. But
Studstill, in that series where Tavon Coney had his 2, where it tackled for loss and a sack, Studstill also had a tackle. There was a gain, but it was a minimal gain.
On the one play, I'm trying to remember if it actually turned into a touchdown. Everybody's kind of getting after Studstill. Thought he took a bad angle, to the receiver, but that was actually Julian Love's fault. He didn't contain the receiver. He was supposed to keep him inside, which would have given Studstill a clear shot to him. Well, he didn't do that, and it looked like it was Studstill's fault that, you know, he came in at the wrong angle and let the guy get past him, but that was actually on the cornerback, on Julian Love. So they played pretty good. The one interesting thing was Tirico said, it was about the beginning of the game, he told Flutie, he was like, "I'm going to be very honest with you. They're very worried about the safety play." And this is somebody that gets access to the staff, Brian Kelly and the staff, before games. And so that was a little, that makes a little more sense why they did file to for
Gilman
to see if the NCAA will let him play this year. But it does sound like they're definitely worried about safety play. They did good. I thought they did pretty good on Saturday, but the staff is obviously worried about it.
And I'm glad that they were able to get this many players in early on. It's not like they were only playing for a dozen snaps in the fourth quarter. I mean, they played early on, and they played a lot of snaps, defensive line through the safeties. So yeah. I think it's good for a couple reasons, experience, but then also if they're playing, and it looks like they didn't make a lot of mistakes, tackling was solid. It means that, at least for the most part, the second strings also get the defense.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there anything more? Okay, let's talk about special. Are you done, Randall, with defense? I don't have anything more. Special teams, definitely I'm disappointed in missing two field goals. Brian Kelly said in the post-game press conference he's not worried at all, and he is kicking it hard and well. It's just off.
He said his hair aren't on fire about it. And it wasn't in one of the first four or five things that he mentioned that they need to work on. You know, he said he's striking the ball well. Well,
doesn't matter how a lot of
people go out there
it.
And strike the ball well. There's only a few that can actually put it through the goalposts for field goals. Here's the thing. Yoon has a bad history of the first part of the season. He's actually 6 of 12 on field goals in September.
Does that include Saturday's game?
Yeah. And he's after that, he's 22 out of 24. But why is it so? Why?
I know. Is it nerves? The beginning Here's of the season?
Thing. Not all kickers get a scholarship. A lot of them don't. Here's the number one kicker in the country that got a scholarship. And so this is his third year. And this is disappointing that he's missing these.
I agree. It's disappointing, and we're kind of going back and forth playing devil's advocate. But on the other side, he didn't practice in the spring.
True.
He was recovering from an injury. But you're also right. He has done this the past few years in September.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what that is. Does he have to get the nerve? I mean, it makes me
wonder. Okay, so this game was barely ever in question after the first half of the first quarter. This game wasn't in question anymore.
Yeah.
But against Georgia, you're not going to know when the game is close. I mean, it could be close until the very end. So in the first quarter, on the opening drive, do you trust Yoon to kick a 35-yard field goal, or do you go for it on fourth down?
Which both of these were over 40 yards, right? I believe so. It was like 44 and 40, I think.
And he did make all the extra points, so.
Last year he missed an extra point in September, so add that into the misses. It's concerning.
It is concerning.
That's 6 points. And
against Georgia, 6 points will probably win the game.
Yeah, you could be right. I mean,
it'll probably be within 6 points.
I think that's what the spread is right now, by the way.
I didn't look, but I'm assuming it's close. Or 6 points.
It's growing because their starting quarter, Jacob Eason, is hurt.
I just have to throw this in. I told my friend that he's debating about going to the game because he thinks this will be
the turning point
of
Notre Dame football.
Yeah, like the biggest game in Notre Dame history, basically. And I do think that Notre Dame's going to win this game. Big part of it because it's at home. And I told him after this game, but before the Georgia game, before Georgia played Appalachian State, and before we knew that the quarterback would be injured, that Notre Dame would be favored in this game. And now we'll never know because their quarterback went down, so now I don't know.
But, yeah, I'm not as I guess I'm a lot more worried than what Brian Kelly seems to be about this kicking situation.
And I have to believe he's also worried.
Well, yeah.
Especially if we'd be playing Miami of Ohio next. Yeah, I'm not as worried about Miami.
Does it make a difference? Do you think Ewing plays better under pressure?
Let's hope so, because there will be pressure. Because in September,
you're less likely to play. You know, you're playing Temple. It's not as high pressure. Could that be something to do with it? You're playing...
Well, I'm just thinking of...
But should be the easier
game. Did he miss any against Texas last year?
I'd have to go... I don't remember. Probably if it was September. Except they were basically scoring touchdowns.
Yeah. Okay, I don't have anything more than on special teams, do you?
Okay, so Ewing struggled, but Newsom did a good job. He averaged 52 yards.
I was just going to skip over that, but I'm glad you mentioned it.
Punted twice, but we have to point this out. I mean, he had a long of 54, and I guess was the other one. He had a total of 104 yards. But we like to harp on him when he has terrible kicks, so got to give him a shout-out when he's doing good. So he did very good on the punts.
And again,
with the punts on Saturday,
it doesn't matter in blowouts, but against Georgia, against close games, against tough teams, it is going to matter.
Yeah,
field goals and punting, and a big part of that too. I mean, there's virtually no returns on those punt returns.
Yeah,
on Notre Dame's punts, I don't think there was any return. If there was, it was just 1 or 2 yards.
Another thing I'll point out with the it was on kick returns. Obviously got the kick returners, but then Temple had a short kickoff, and then Notre Dame has 3 tight ends lined up. And so those guys can catch the ball. So these squib kicks, you're probably not going to do very much because you got 3 guys that can catch the ball. It's not like you have, you know, a linebacker there or whoever. It's 3 guys that...
You don't have Alize Mack out there. Or maybe you do.
He was not one of the 3. So, anyways.
One other thing. Drew Tranquil was also out there on, I don't remember if it was one of the punt return or the punt coverage units or if it was the kickoff.
Okay.
But that was one of the players that was specifically mentioned he would be out there on special teams.
I missed that. So.
Okay. And maybe he was filling in for...
Alize Mack.
No. For Smythe when he was going through concussion. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't remember when it was. Okay.
I'm sure it was on coverage. Or not on coverage. On coverage.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was one of those units. All right. Thank you guys for listening.
I do have the score prediction winner.
Oh, yeah.
Matthew Thomas. Twitter handle is @mthomas238. He predicted 45-17.
Hold dead.
So he was very close.
Not bad.
He will get a free pound of coffee from Main Street Roasters, and we will be doing this every week. I did not get it put out on Facebook. I had it on our Instagram and Twitter where you could comment and give us your score prediction. So definitely make sure that you join in with that next week.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be doing our preview Wednesday night, and we've got some articles up on the website. Solon has a 2-part series with his initial thoughts from Notre Dame's victory over Temple. So go ahead. The first one's out there now, and the other one will be out there tomorrow afternoon. So check those out. Those are over at irishsportstalk.net. We've got the forums, forums.irishsportstalk.net. If you want to start a little conversation, it's free to sign up, free to use. So you can head on over and do that. So thank you guys for listening, and until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.